I'm the cat with the bass and drum, going around like bum bum bum.
We're up to episode 3, gentlemen. We seem to be going along quite nicely. We're all still friends. Got ourselves an Instagram account. You can follow us at whatsnext.pod. We've even got a couple of special guests lined up for the future. So it's all getting a bit exciting. How's your week been, fellas?
Yeah, good, thanks, mate. Better for the fat Newcastle win playing. But one positive of COVID keeps us off air. Keeps me in a good mood all weekend. Can't have Brucey's mags ruining that weekend nice and early with the Friday night kickoff.
Tinners, how are you getting on, mate?
I can only agree with Jim. Nice little win for Liverpool over the weekend. Good week so far.
Well, it was another busy week of sport, wasn't it? A lot to digest. Man, you've gone from being dead cert to qualifying, potential Thursday night football again, whilst the other English teams are qualified with ease. Sunderland have lost, sacked the manager, appointed a new manager, and lost again. Alex Morgan scored a first Women's Super League goal for Spurs. Falcons are still unbeaten on the return to the Prem. And England have won the Autumn Nations Cup against the French B team, despite Owen Farrell's right boot. England haven't played any ODIs due to COVID, and Hamilton couldn't drive his car because of COVID. But finally, North London is white. Arsenal, as we all predicted. Tinners, I think I'm giving you the point this week. You called the clean sheet. You see the game? Any thoughts?
Standard Mourinho, wasn't it, really? Just did what he needed. I mean, Arsenal were pretty poor, as they have been most of the season in the Prem, but I think Son and Kane are just too good for Arsenal at the minute. And I think that's kind of why me and Jim both went fairly high. But I did think they might get a third goal. But I think Mourinho just thought, I'll take the 2-0 and sit back a little bit, which is exactly what he did. So happy to take a 1-0 lead so far on the pod.
His favourite scoreline.
Has Arteta lost the plot by throwing an injured Thomas Partey on the pitch?
You've just got to try.
You are our only hope here, Thomas. Please get back on and stop Son if you can.
Those two are phenomenal. There was something earlier on about the best pairings in Premier League football and stats, and how it's only December and combinations for goals, etc. And the only two pairs beating them are Sutton and Shearer, or Fraser and Wilson, but obviously not in black and white just yet. But
Fraser and Wilson?
Apparently, that's what they reckon.
What about Cole and Beardsley?
I don't know, Jimmy.
Shearer and Ferdinand? Barr and Cisse?
Jimmy and Andy.
Jimmy and Riviere and Amiobi.
Enough of that, Jimmy. We'll get on to some proper headlines. What's next?
The headline I'm going with this week, lads, if I can quickly get it up on my phone, is from Sky News, and it focuses on the return of English football. And the headline reads, "Back to the agony and the ecstasy, fans return to football stadiums." And linking a little bit back to what I noticed in the North London Derby at the weekend, is it's great to have fans back and everything else, but just how bad some of the crap coming out of the fans has been. I don't know if you picked up on the Tottenham fans and a little bit of the Brighton fans last night singing, "Your support is fucking shit," at an empty away end. There's 2,000 of yous. Does it genuinely not take a single away fan for you to pluck up the courage to all of a sudden start doing this?
There's a lot of irony in it. There was something that I saw earlier on. It was a hypothetical situation. They were saying Man U Leeds is coming up. And as always, they try and hype that into a derby for whatever reason. They were saying because of such comments and things like that, they should have 2,000 Man U fans at Old Trafford and take one sole Leeds fan and stand him in the away fans by himself and just let him take all the abuse and the can't abuse him back. But that would be interesting. A capacity of 2,001 and just see one mad Leeds fan going at it.
I'd love to see the policing for it. They'd have to go all out. They can't hold back, and that would be carnage.
Yeah, I was disappointed in the fans over the weekend, the chanting and things like that. The main one that was just a disgrace, really, wasn't it? You wait 6 months to get back into a stadium and Millwall have just embarrassed themselves. That was my... It stole the headlines, and it wouldn't surprise me if people started saying, get them out of fans, and it gives football fans a bad name. Millwall have done nothing for their reputation, and any single person for me that joined in that booing, and it can't be that hard to find them, they shouldn't be allowed back into a game for me. That should be them done. You've waited 6 months, you've wasted it. It's racist. You don't need to boo any sort of movement in support of a Black Lives movement. Whatever they do following on from that, whether they're linking arms this evening with QPR, whether they're replacing a logo on this strip, whatever it might be, it's too late and it's wrong. and those 2,000 fans should never be allowed in a stadium again.
I'd like to see them ban the fans and then double the ban for anyone who turns around and tries to claim it's political, because not only are you racist, you're a liar.
It's not, yeah, exactly. It's not a political movement. If you'd asked a few months ago, when the fans are allowed back in whatever numbers, whatever capacity that might be, one football club are going to let themselves down. There's going to be a controversial moment. I'd have said Millwall there and then. And
yeah, you probably would have done. I think the shame of it is, not only are they sort of bringing a dark light on what is a fantastic movement and everyone has got behind since football restarted and back in June, I feel like they've taken possibly my favourite early weekend headline away from their London rivals, Charlton, who were going around social media because after 3 months out of their stadium, they booed their players off the pitch. And that's what I love. Absolutely. You've been away from a football ground for 3 months. First game back. And it comes back to this headline, the agony and the ecstasy. The ecstasy of being back in the ground, taking in the atmosphere, going along with the family, the friends, whoever. Okay, you can in London, you can meet up, have a substantial meal and a couple of pints beforehand, watching your team for 90 minutes and still feeling the need that after 3 months, you need to let them know they're still shite.
I think it's the same with the there was a Colchester taking both points. There was a Colchester footballer who played in their game, and theirs was, it was something like 90 minutes. Their kickoff was 90 minutes after the Millwall game, and Sky Sports had basically said if you listen very closely, you can hear a couple of boos at their game as well. But because it wasn't so loud and it wasn't as kind of vocal as the Millwall one, they slowly sloped off a little bit. And he basically came out and said, "We have 8 seconds at the start of every game to do it. You haven't been in the ground for 6 months, what on earth are you playing?" That kind of thing. And he basically said if he'd heard the Colchester fans actually doing it, he said he's pretty sure their team would have walked off, because they'd obviously discussed it with what had happened with the Millwall. And then also the Charlton thing, I saw a couple of their supporters being interviewed, and they literally couldn't care less about being back at the football. They were just like, "Well, we're still shite. What we're doing? Like, I don't get like how, what we're doing after all this time. We come back and that's the performance." It was just like you say, some people don't quite care about little bits and pieces of just being back to enjoy something. How lucky they probably are. And the first thing that we do is just complain about.
Coming back to the introduction, Bruce is probably delighted that Boris has kept us in Tier 3. Could you imagine the stick he'd get from those 2,000 fans back in St. James's?
But didn't Millwall know that it was going to happen? There'd been enough on social medias and fan forums and things like that. There were comments after the game saying we knew it was going to happen. We didn't know to what extent. And like you say, Colchester saying we would have walked off the pitch if we'd knew, if we could realise, if we had happened, etc. How Millwall have allowed something to happen. I know it's not as much as saying, asking a question on the door, are you going to boo letting someone in, and oh, you've let us down. It's happened. It's horrific. They've got to act after it.
Okay, well, they've acted now in a way. Would you say that by telling the players to link arms instead of taking a knee, do you think that's the right or wrong move? Personally, I think it's the wrong move. I would say, no matter what your fans have done and what they argue, and if they say it's political, I'd say, you get out there and you still take a knee. We know it's not political. So long as the club and the players know what they're doing it for, it shouldn't matter what 2,000 fans are misleadingly believing or wanting to believe because of their whatever racist nature or whatever it is. It's not all Millwall fans as well. You should make that perfectly clear. I saw Blake Harrison from the Inbetweeners, who's a Millwall fan, tweet saying that he was ashamed to be associated with the club that day.
I know. I'm not labelling every single one of them. I'm labelling those of them that were involved and those of them that were involved, and I'm hoping it would be easier to identify them in a stadium that's only got 2,000 people in it than it would be if there was a full capacity in there, and those people that were taking part and have made it known. And it goes back almost to the argument about social media, those people that were tweeting about it saying, "We're going to do it, we're going to have a protest, we're going to be racist." There needs to be something on the social media to work out how these trolls can be identifiable to some extent. But will you be racing back to watch Brucey James once they're allowed back in?
I won't be going in a hurry. However, what I have discovered over the weekend is the glory of non-league football, and what a weekend it has led to. Genuinely cannot begin to express how much I've enjoyed a 2 o'clock kickoff at Newcastle Blue Star, watching them play against Ponteland. They weren't allowed to warm up on the pitch because it was too muddy. So as we arrived, walking down the bank, walking past a group of lads getting the takeaway pints, £3 entry on door. They gave you a token in case you needed to go back and get another pint. Portaloos in the ground, a rail around the side, and Newcastle Blue Star warming up on the under sevens pitch next door because they weren't allowed on the main pitch before kickoff. A great big no nonsense centre half, number five captain for Newcastle Blue Star, had actually a pretty tidy game despite the fact he did not play one pass along the floor. Everything was at the pitch, proper no nonsense football. Three penalties in the game, three missed penalties in the game.
The refs made all three, about him.
Three missed or three saves.
I'd go the other way. It's not like watching a Mike Dean. I don't know if either of you saw Pereira's red card for West Brom on Sunday, was it, in the early kickoff?
Yeah.
Honestly, that epitomises the Premier League now. Saturday League, there's two lads going head-to-head in the middle of the pitch and the referee shouting play on around it.
Just how many people were in, Jimmy?
Tough to tell. I wasn't on the door, but I reckon maybe 100, including they do a raffle on social media to sit in the box. And basically, they've got, I don't know how to describe it, they've got these cabins set up and some stairs and you get a fancy inside box. And when Pontila missed their second penalty, the windows of the box nearly went through with the lads banging on it.
Was it missed penalties, Jim, or was it saves, or what we talking?
Three saves, I believe. Albeit one of them, the striker scored the rebound on the first one. The keeper made a very good save and palmed it straight out in front of him. The striker knocked it in.
We don't need to know that. But, three missed, well, sound better.
Pontilan got the first two penalties of the game. They were 1-0 up, and when they missed the second penalty, Newcastle's own goalkeeper and England's future number one, Carl Darlow, was... Carl Darlow, great to see. He's dragged his lasso on to watch a bit of Saturday League on a cold, windy Saturday afternoon as if she's got nothing better to do.
Are you going to get in trouble when he should be isolating, Jimmy?
Well, look, I'm sure he'd be fine. Otherwise, he wouldn't have been there in his full disguise, mask up. But when that second penalty was saved and he's given it the absolute big in behind the goal for the goalkeeper.
Keeper's union.
I thought the fans were going to be on the pitch, including the group of absolute hooligans who kept calling the lino out.
Did it feel busy, Jimmy, or not? Was it?
Yeah, it did. I think what helped was the fact that there wasn't any stands. So, I mean, looking at the Premier League stuff this weekend, I thought the stadiums being half full almost had an atmosphere of a bit of a lot of work with summed it up nicely. He said it's like watching an international friendly where England are playing away, it's somewhere and the fans have been banned because of previous actions in a previous game, and it's just a bit of a non-start. It was a little bit like that, which is why I'm not overly enthusiastic about the Premier League returning until it's back to its full glory.
I was thinking, I was trying to work out what the number is, and there's even something talking about potentially getting the crowds up to 4,000 in the next couple of weeks in around Christmas and stuff like that. I think especially fortunate enough to go to St. James's regularly and with it being the 52,000, somewhere like that with 2,000 spaces, even if it's 4,000 seats taken up, it's still going to feel like a behind closed doors game. And I think I'm similar. You go for the environment, the atmosphere. You don't necessarily go for the football at St. James's, but 50-odd thousand people walking up to the stadium, being in the stadium together, it's a completely different feeling to 2,000. And I think maybe at 50%, I'll start thinking that's about right that I'd want to go. But they're eerily quiet across the board, whether that's Anfield, White Hart Lane the other day, Twickenham for the rugby, where it was all NHS workers and things like that. I just think 50%, TV doesn't even pick up half of the crowd sometimes. And you look at it when they're over in Australia, New Zealand at the moment, and they've had the NRL going on. They've had their rugby championship with full crowds. There was the indoor arenas and the netball, etc. It looks amazing. And as soon as you can get back to that, I think that's when I'll make my return personally. But before that, maybe I'll join you on the touchline of 100. Could you get food or was it just pints, Jimmy?
Just pints, cans in a little Sainsbury's bag walking in.
Bring your own.
BYOB.
Well, that's fair enough.
Honestly, can't excuse it enough. Genuinely, the Pontian goalkeeper's had a bit of a howler. He's gone to knock a ball over the bar. He's knocked it in the back of his own net. He's been greeted by a group of maybe 8 or 10, 11-year-olds running around the pitch solely to call him a wanker. And it's stuff like that that I can absolutely get behind.
It's funny, I was seeing, obviously, that sort of thing is quite obvious to hear when there's only 100 people there. And obviously there's all sorts of hot mic takes going on at the moment. You can hear absolutely all sorts and things like that. And Ben Foster's had a GoPro in the bottom of his goal in the championship.
Been watching these, they're brilliant.
And there's been all sorts. And it's that sort of thing that actually you do feel miles closer to the action when you turn off the crowd noise and all you can hear is someone shouting, get fucking back, cover him, behind you, shoulder. And you just hear the insight into the game. In the rugby, you hear some of the collisions. In the cricket, you hear Josh Butler calling Philander whatever he wants to call them and things like that. It is miles better. And you need to mic up players.
Did you hear the one of Rob Holden and Adama Traore?
Yeah.
That was a classic. When Rob Holden's stick thin centre half and Adama's built like a brick shit house, and he's literally saying to the ref, how can he fall over like that? He built like a brick shit house, and Adama's rolling around on the floor because Rob's dropped a little elbow on him or something like that.
It gives you an insight, though. I mean, we've all played that sort of level of sport where it's a little bit Saturday, Sunday league-ish, whether it's football, rugby, cricket, whatever. And the conversations that go on between players, between officials, I'd love to know what's said at Saturday level, like in professional Premier League. I'd love to know.
It can't be any different. It can't be. They just don't get heard.
No, they don't get heard, but I know that when they're going through academies, they've got training on media and stuff like that and how to handle the media and how to present themselves. But at the end of the day, like, these kids, like, they're not the brightest.
It's the old Warnock thing.
They've got decent footballing levels. They're dropping out of school at 16. You're not a Frank Lampard going in with your A-levels. Like, they're going to have absolute howlers and they're going to say some really stupid stuff that's going to get picked up on camera.
There was a couple of a referee in Spain. There was a couple of clips I saw on Twitter of this referee in Spain. It was all the big games he was doing, and it was obviously with no crowd. And some of the stuff he was saying to the players, and some of the stuff they were saying back, was just classic. I mean, he was basically just ignoring 95% of the stuff because he was just getting a lot of abuse and just telling them where to go. I mean, Messi was coming over and he was just telling them to get up and keep playing.
In a way, though, obviously, it links back a little bit to almost VAR. If the referee's mic'd up and you can hear what he's saying and what's going on, I don't need to hear what people are saying to him. But I think when they're doing the
integrity
VAR
in the game is
transcripts, and this almost comes back to when you've got fans in the ground. I think now they're starting to get fans back in. There's even more of an emphasis for them to sort VAR out and say, what's going on? Again, beautiful thing about that was none of that on a non-league Saturday. You haven't got any cameras. Goal goes in. You know what the crack is. If the Lioners flags down, doesn't matter how hard the Oppo bench are shouting at him.
Did the ref and the Linesman have a good game, Jimmy, or...
Linesman was a pensioner, well off the pace of the line. Jenny didn't have a clue what was going on. Kept pulling his shorts up as he was running down the line. Proper village. What you get for £3, to be honest, on the door.
Was there many big Sunday league tackles?
Oh, yeah. Huge.
Really good.
Those tackles, you know, where you can hear it.
Yeah. And then the lads just get up and get on with it.
I mean...
Yeah.
The left back for the left back for the away team was a bit of a big lad, more in the sense that he was muscular than fat. But playing down one wing, I don't think there's a worse place to play because he was just getting peppered everywhere he ran. The entire length of the pitch, he was getting abused. You fat bastard! And there was a moment in the second half where he copped it. A ball went loose, and it was an easy just put it out of play. And he has absolutely volleyed it into a group of lads, almost to prove a point of, how are then? Come on, let's have it. And stuff like that, tackle like that, a bit of shithousery, get behind it. You don't see it enough in the Premier League. Or if you do, you certainly don't hear about it. Saturday football, it's where the future is. Put more money at the grassroots.
What will interest me is how they get these indoor stadiums and indoor arenas back with their crowds. So all the football... It's outdoors, you can space them in the stadium, things like that. They're talking the big one of the massive losses of this whole restrictions, lockdowns and things like that is the Ali Pali for the darts over Christmas. And that is what Christmas is all about. That's what happens. And they've reduced the numbers that they're allowed in. They're taking it down from the 3,500, 4,000 to 1,500, 2,000 indoors. They're restricting it to tables of four. There's no bleachers, so to speak. It's table service only. There's no fancy dress. There's no football chants.
There's no fancy dress.
No fancy dress.
What's the point? A bit like the Premier League. What's the point?
Well, that's the question, isn't it? You've got them all there trying to promote it. It's going to be on TV anyway. It's not going to be the same. are they actually better off just saying, let's just do this behind closed doors, and then we'll get 4,000 of you in next year, and we can have the 4,000 traffic cones. We can have Tinky Winky launching one over Jack Sparrow and things like that. We can go and see Woodsy. But at the moment, that's them trying to get some money.
I don't get it.
40 quid a ticket, Jimmy.
Is that cheaper than usual?
No.
Do they knock some money off for the fact that you can't go and be as rowdy as you want?
No, that's inflated prices.
Honestly, Brexit normally, Britain.
Normally 20 quid for the privilege.
I'm lost for words.
How many times have you been, Doug? Have you just been the one?
Twice at the Ali Pali and once to the Premier League. The Ali Pali is absolutely different gravy.
I'll tell you what I do enjoy. I do enjoy seeing Gil and Price turn around and give it the big into an empty stand there.
to his wife on the first time at home.
Giving that aggressive, roided fist bump, giving it a...
They've got There's the no stage one, going on. They're playing darts on the hockey and they've got a live screen of their wife sat watching in the living room. It is so budget.
She's probably turned Corey on and just got the Zoom call on to keep the face there. No one cares. Honestly, just...
Unbelievable.
I think you've got to go all or nothing. I get why they're being a bit reserved, but surely fancy dress or not, there's no need to then turn around and cancel that. That doesn't make a difference, does it?
Well, I imagine it might be to do with smuggling things in, especially if it's going to be limited drinks, if it's table service, etc. But they're relatively tight on things like that anyway. Down there, whenever I've been, it's a big area. So, I don't know.
Isn't that just more slightly rowdy when you are, but when everyone is dressed up in fancy dress, everyone's in the same, there'll be people in the dressed up in the same stuff and you end up getting in a photo with people that you wouldn't necessarily know. And you end up I imagine you just end up mixing together with other people anyway that are dressed up because it's a bit of a laugh. And I suppose that's why I've got to do it. Like you said, they just made a bit of cash.
Trying to avoid mixing it. So it's in your four that you travel with. And obviously that's meant to be the same household. So people will go as their fours will sit at the same tables, it'll be certain entrances, certain exits and things like that. There'll be precautions in place, but yeah, it won't be anywhere near the same. Much like in the football, it's still a relatively sterile environment.
Yeah, I think it would be difficult for them, but it's one of those things, like we said, it's making a bit of money back, getting a little bit of atmosphere back, I suppose. It'll be a better atmosphere than what the football will have. I don't think the fans have brought an awful lot of difference to football, especially in the bigger grounds, whereas I suppose whatever the numbers are at the darts, it'll be increasing the atmosphere, like you said, not turn around and celebrate into a FaceTime camera of your wife at home. It'll probably be a bit more interesting with a few sports there.
Was it the World Championships where Danny Willett napped a pint a couple of years ago?
Yeah, they quite often have someone turns up in the bottom corner. Loads of the footballers get in there and they'll sit on the table. Savage is always there and he's having his wanker shouted at him the whole time. And yeah, Danny Willett, I think, stood up just after he'd won the Masters and he stood on the table next to pints. I remember being there last year and Pickford was there and I think he did the same. And then all he did was kept getting told off for standing on chairs and things like that. He nearly got lifted out. Which was quite
Robbie Savage, he absolutely cops it where he goes.
Everywhere
he goes. He loves it though, doesn't he? He absolutely loves
That's
it.
When you know football's back, when you can get another 3,000 people in at the away end of Rochdale calling Savage a wanker.
As soon as you have to
he starts crying about it on Five Live again.
As soon as you have to turn down the mics behind the away fans, that is when football is back.
How would you like it if I came to your work and started abusing you?
Outside the showroom. Cheers, pal.
Try me, Robbie.
Very good. Well, talking about crowds and et cetera, Doigie, what's next?
Yeah, I've taken a headline from the Mirror this week, again from the world of football. Michael Owen says informed Chelsea star could cost them the Premier League. Now, for me, there are so many angles that can be taken from this headline. You could talk about whether Owen is the worst, dullest pundit on sport. We can talk about whether Chelsea are genuine title contenders, or we can talk about the blame that Michael Owen is actually trying to blame on who Gary Lineker described at the weekend as the most underrated striker in the league in Oliver Giroud. So that's what I'm going to go with. Not only is he incredibly handsome, not only has he managed to overcome a sex scandal that rocked his marriage a couple of years ago, not only did he score 5 goals last week, and not only has he become the first player to score in 6 consecutive Premier League starts for Chelsea since Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank, but he still has Michael Owen urging Lampard to go out and replace him in January. He is the most underappreciated, underrated player in the team in the Premier League right now.
I didn't really rate him. But seeing how rattled he's got Michael Owen, right up there. He's living in your head rent-free, Michael.
I think he is underrated. I think he is underappreciated. I think in that Chelsea team, the dimension that he can add to them, I don't think he is just a target man that he gets labelled with. I don't think he needs to be. He scores freakish free kicks. He scores scorpion kicks. He can get on the end of it. He can head a ball. He can finish in the box. I think he is underrated. It wasn't more a dig at Michael Owen. It wasn't more a dig at Lampard. Or it wasn't a plea to go out and replace him or not to replace him. But it was, who else is underrated in the league? Who else is invaluable to their team or underappreciated in their team?
It's probably easy to kick off with kind of our teams or swarm. I'm sure Jimmy's got so much from Newcastle, that's fairly underrated.
Oh, too right, he has.
For me, Liverpool's most underrated player. I mean, he's a massively rated player in general, but I think if we lost him, and he's been very lucky that he's been fit for most of the time, is Wijnaldum. I think he does nigh on everything that Klopp needs him to do and is a perfect fit for him. I think when Henderson's been out, he's kind of done Henderson's job as well. So I think Ginny's pretty much one of Liverpool's most underrated players. I know we talked about James Milner in pod one and how underrated or underappreciated he probably is. But I think for a starting 11 player in the Premier League, I know we're talking about the best or the league champions at the minute, but I think he's up there with one of the most underrated. Bear in mind, he was relegated with Newcastle to come and do what he's done. And just to be pretty much number one on the list, I think he's pretty...
Yeah, underrated. I've got a bit of a love-hate sort of feeling towards Gini Wijnaldum, because whenever we played in Newcastle and he was in an NE postcode, he was dynamite. And the moment he went over the Tyne Bridge to get to an away game, he vanished. And it's actually upset me to see him do so well at Liverpool. Because I want to sit here and go, he's a prick. But I can't. I actually quite like him. Yeah. I like his energy.
He just runs around the pitch and does pretty much everything. Gets stuck in. I know his contract's coming up to the end soon, and it'd be silly not to keep him and put him on a bumper contract, because I think without him, like I say, he's been fit now. He's now and always fit, and he can do any role that's in that team. I mean, he came from Newcastle as a bit of a left mid, left winger, and now he's pretty much cemented himself as a centre midfielder in the Premier League winning
side.
That
epitomises Newcastle, that, by the way, because we signed him as a centre midfielder. So he's gone from being a centre mid to getting shunted out of position at Newcastle, to then going back to centre mid and winning a Champions League and a Premier League.
Isn't that a little bit like more Sissoko as well, though? Because he played on the right for Newcastle, but then Tottenham...
Nah, Sissoko was shite. Well, stop. We're not going into that.
Yeah, but
don't bring his name into this podcast, John.
Oh, God. Stay away from Morland.
At Spurs, though, speaking of Spurs, just quickly, Jimmy.
Yeah, go on then.
I quite often feel as though, and I think probably mentioning Wijnaldum in that... probably justifies this a little part. Underrated players in that conversation tends to actually be players who are pretty decent pedigree, just almost not that underappreciated. They're not the superstar on their team. And I think up until recently, Son was quite underrated at Spurs. And I think he is still underappreciated, that he wouldn't make many people's league top five players conversation at the moment. But the contribution and what he is playing week in, week out, he's probably deserving of that. And therefore, if he's not getting rated how he should be, he is, by definition, underrated.
I think, unfortunately for Son, what's probably kept him out of those pit, like those sort of teams of the year and everything else and everyone's top five picks or whatever, is the strength of the opposition around him in the wings. If you consider that City, in previous years, have had Sterling, Sané, Mahrez, just to name a few. There's more that I can name at their place, but I'm struggling to do it. Liverpool have obviously got Salah and Mane, there's Shaqiri at Liverpool, there's Miramino, if you want to bring him into the conversation.
You can't tell me either of those two are better than Son.
No, but you know what I mean? That all of a sudden, I think there's a lot of opposition at teams that are probably, well, they're not probably, they are categorically a lot more successful than Tottenham.
Willian's a pretty good wide player.
What's that?
Willian's a pretty good wide player.
Yeah, you like your Willian? You like Willian, right? Yeah, Willian's past it. Let's not bring him into this conversation, Andy. Again, let's not dirty the pod with talk of Willian being the best player in the league.
Top 10.
Alan Saint-Maximin. Better than Son.
Yeah, is he underrated, though?
Alan? No. I think he's overrated. I think he's stopped turning up. He's got the hat and Ben Arthur's about him. Yeah. When he's on, he's on. When he's not, you may as well be playing with 10.
Another one that I think
getting
is
off topic, though, because I think you could go back to a Newcastle player who is underrated, is I think you were about to say that.
Go on then, Jimmy. Go on, see if we were matching.
Well, I was going to say Isaac Hayden.
Yeah, I was going to go in goal at the moment. I was going to go Darlow as being underappreciated, undervalued at the moment. But yeah,
certainly thinking Newcastle, Isaac Hayden is the most underrated player. Maybe it's a biased opinion because I remember a couple of years ago watching in the build-up to the World Cup, watching Shelvey and Lascelles week in, week out, and saying Southgate's got to take him to the World Cup. And when he didn't, being absolutely furious. And then watching them now and thinking, does Jamal Lascelles actually know how to play football?
I think the thing about watching Hayden at the moment is since he wanted away in January, not January, a couple of years ago in January, and he wanted back to London, he wanted back to the capital for family reasons, etc. And at that point, it was almost fine go. It's actually almost the change in ability, in how much he's offering to that side, how, as you say, exactly how crucial he is to that team. We are a far better, completely different team when he's on the pitch in that central midfield.
He offers you legs, and I feel like in the Newcastle midfield, it's something you don't necessarily have. But in respect to what we were saying earlier about Wijnaldum and Sissoko, I think he went the opposite way. Those two wanted away, and they almost shut up shop and said, right, well, this isn't my problem anymore. I'm not going to be here next year. He was a little bit humming and hawing. There was a bid from Brighton in the summer that Newcastle rejected because they couldn't get a replacement in. He had the absolute shocker at Cardiff where he was playing out of position, and he got sent off for that foul on Josh Murphy, where he openly said afterwards, he was taking the piss, I had to do something. I like that attitude as well. But he's stood up and he's fought for his position. And I think it's just a different attitude that Newcastle fans aren't entirely used to. And I think that's what makes Newcastle fans sit up and say, he deserves a shot. It's...
Do you think it's all Newcastle fans have got the same opinion as you, or do you think it's limited? Because sometimes I'll be on Twitter or something on the Newcastle when all the teams get released, and there'll be some people saying, "What on earth is he doing playing?" Mostly positive, but there is sometimes people saying,
I think Newcastle have got possibly one of the oddest fan bases ever. You've got.
And is it because he's not the most creative footballer in the world, but actually does everything, like basically what we're talking about, doing everything, all the dirty hard work that no one else really wants to do. I imagine when Shelvey plays, from watching him, he looks fairly lazy, right? He might play the great pass and do whatever, but Hayden does all the dirty work that the other midfielders.
I think dirty work goes, it's one of those that I don't think you appreciate someone until you don't have them anymore. I think it was a little bit like that with Cheikh Tiote when he played for us and how good he was back in 2011-12, and then when he was injured the season after, and all of a sudden we had a bit of a shortage of midfield and you were filling in with players like Vernon and Ita, and you didn't have him there as a powerhouse, you thought that's when you need a player like that. But particularly up in Newcastle where your goal scorers are worshipped, I think the emphasis on defensive minded players does slip through the net a little bit. I mean, everyone gets dead excited about someone like Alan Saint-Maximin, but at the end of the day, I think if an offer came in from another club, he would jump ship as soon as possible. Personal opinion, could be horribly wrong here, could upset a lot of people with that sort of opinion as well, but I just think Isaac Hayden's a little bit more in touch with the club, and does that make sense? Like, I think it's more...
Yeah. Well, I think, like you said, he was going to go, wasn't it, a couple of years ago, like Doug said, and then he's just knuckled down and grafted for 2 years, and probably he's absolutely loves it up here now because he's basically the first name on the team sheet, I'd imagine, other than probably he's Callum Wilson. But he's certainly, every time I watch and think, he always does a bit of a job. I mean, he plays centre-half every now and again. Oh, he certainly filled in when I've seen. It was one of the three when they had a lot of injuries. There's not many footballers are happy to do that.
Coming back to another former Newcastle name then, and I want your opinions on this because I get a little bit divided. Mitrovic.
he wasn't the striker I thought you were going to go with there for the ex Newcastle one. I thought you were going to go with Perez.
Well, that's another one. I want to look at Mitrovic first of all, though, because everyone raves about him, and there's a lot of fans on Twitter who obviously love the passion that he showed on the pitch, and they just couldn't quite get their head around the fact that he wasn't very good. And I think there's now a lot of people that still say, oh, well, we never should have sold Mitrovic. You know, he could be up front, him and Wilson. He'd be better than Joe Linton. I'm just still not sold on him. And
Didn't you sell him for was it 35
million to a championship club? And yeah, he was a good championship player. I just think he's got the Dwight Gales about him.
But I just think if Newcastle want to move from where they are now to up, there's no point of thinking about a championship striker, because at the end of the day, we sold him for 35 million, right? Joe Linton was slightly more than that. The chances are Joe Linton will end up being a better player than Mitrovic will, because Mitrovic is a bit of a bully in centre forward, and he's good target man. But realistically, Joe Linton's going to be slightly better. And like you said, Joe Linton's a championship. Mitrovic is a championship striker. He is literally the bigger version of Dwight Gayle. I'm sure if them two played up front of the championship, they'd score 30 goals each every season.
I think as long as Mitrovic has his hotheads about him. And I remember it when he made his debut at St. James's, and he went down and he bounced up and he was banging his chest and stuff like that. And everyone's going, this is what we need. This is what we're after. And like you say, when you sell him for 30-odd million a couple of years down the line, you don't miss him massively out there in that presence on the pitch. Yes, it was funny to watch him. Yes, it was. But like you say, Newcastle are a Premier League club where we need more than someone who's good to laugh at now and again. So I don't think he's underrated. I think almost at that price tag, he's overrated. But
no, that's what I'm saying. I don't think he's underrated. I thought he was horribly overrated. And I still think he is. I mean, when Fulham came up this year, there was a lot of pundits saying that his goals would keep him up.
Yeah.
His goals didn't keep them up last time. His goals didn't keep us up when he first signed for us. I just think he might get you 10 goals when you include penalties in that as well. But I just think the chances he misses and the opportunities that he failed to take, certainly when he was at us and a little bit of Fulham last time round, is part of the reason why we got relegated and why they got relegated.
What about
cutting some slack? He was only 21 when he was with us. He was younger than me.
He's an absolute Football Manager wonder kid from the past, though.
I wasn't even aware of that.
What about Perez then? Because I always thought Newcastle, again, was a bit of a scapegoat. And you look back at it and how many more his important goals that he scored for us. It was in 1-0s, it was in 2-1s, it was in 1-1s and things like that. And now at Leicester, he's not the main man. Obviously, when you've got the players around you, you've got Vardy and things like that running the line, scoring the goals that he does. But he does a seriously good support act and contributes to that team, who are obviously at that top end of the team. Again, we sold him for decent money and a lot of people thought, absolutely, snap your hand off for. And I don't disagree, you snap your hand off for that price that we got. But is he underrated? Is he underappreciated almost in hindsight at our place?
I think a little bit, but I think when he was at us, we didn't really have any other options to replace him with.
Didn't he do really well after he started getting a load of stick?
He was, funnily enough, a player that always seemed to score goals around a transfer window. I don't think that was him playing for a move away. I think it just happened when his sort of form patches fell. But he would always seem to score goals end of December, start of January. He would then go quiet for a little bit. And then he starts scoring goals end of March, beginning of April, just as the season ended. And there were chances that you would get where technically he had all the ability in the world. He could nutmeg a mermaid. He could do whatever he wanted. But he just never seemed to have that pace to then take him to the next level and get away.
Where was his best position, or where is his best position?
Best position for us was when he played in that 3-4-3 or 5-2-3, whatever you wanted to call it, under Benitez, when he had Almiron and Rondon. And Rondon would hold the ball up and Almiron had that terrifying pace which would stretch defences and all of a sudden gave him those pockets to work in. And I think that's where he worked best for us. And I think he's doing it a little bit less than now, if you consider that they've got Barnes and Vardy, or Madison and Vardy, and then he's slotting in with them, where defences are already stretched and he's just got a bit more time on the ball.
And I suppose he's always got that outlet of Vardy, hasn't he? He's always going to have Vardy sprinting away from him or coming. I suppose he had that outlet with Rondon.
I'd get 5 Premier League assists a year if I could just play a through ball for Vardy to race onto him.
That is an absolute claim.
And I've scored 50.
That's a discussion for another week, but that is a claim.
What was the Man City one?
Playing up front for that.
How many minutes a game would you play, though?
And extra time.
Just not sure that any.
Are you taking all set pieces?
Yeah, I've got tips and everything, and bags and everything. Free kicks, pens.
Sorry,
shooting
Kevin.
From kickoff, all sorts. 15. Don't exactly question.
You could probably walk into.
Do you think if you had a shot from kickoff, you'd make like the first bounce would be in the box?
Yes, because I can hit the crossbar from halfway.
Ooh, look at me! I can kick it dead far. Yeah, I think I get it in the box. I think I'd get it in the box, but I think it would be pretty close.
I don't think I'd get anywhere near.
Yeah, that's because you got 50 pence for it to go after a throw-in.
Probably duff it in front of my 2,000 fans and put it.
Roll it the best strikers that I've got that I think are underrated. Both at very different ends of the league and both at very different stages in their careers right now. Because one is up in the air, unfortunately. Is Jimenez at Wolves, is he underrated?
No, I think he's probably underrated. I think when you've got clubs like Juventus and Man United looking at you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think he's probably perfectly rated, and obviously.
And the other one now, who admittedly a good few years ago is absolutely nowhere near rated, Patrick Bamford, who has found his feet under Bielsa. He's apparently, I saw a stat, he's the joint top scoring player under Bielsa's management with 34. Llorente had 34 at Bilbao under him. His work rate, he's off the ball, he's in a team that creates chances for him now, and they want nice football. So he's allowed to miss one a game because he's going to get another chance. If he was in a team who needed him to score that one chance, that needed him to take it every time, or when he's in Chelsea, he's getting 15 minutes at the end of the game. If he gets one chance, he's got to take it to almost get a chance the next week. I think now that he's just playing and playing and playing, confidence has grown. I think he's underappreciated in the league.
I follow a Leeds fan on Twitter, someone that I've known for quite a while. And last season, he was tweeting saying that if they didn't get promoted, it was Patrick Bamford's fault. So I actually went into the season keeping an eye on Leeds and seeing what they did in the transfer market. And I was surprised when they didn't really go out and buy an out-and-out centre-forward to replace him. But then again, I'm surprised that Bielsa knows a little bit more than Jimmy on the sense of managerial and player fronts. It's the bloke who wrote the managerial book, apparently, in the words of Guardiola and Klopp, knows a player better than I do. Hard to believe.
Yeah, but that's because he's got spies, Jimmy. You haven't got spies. Give you the right resources, and that could be you.
Spygate?
I think he's probably pretty much spot on, really. I think I always think he's really, really young, but I kind of forgot how long he's been around, obviously, when he was on loan from Chelsea. But I think he's probably fairly spot on, really. I mean, Jimmy, you'd expect you to know more than anyway.
I'm not sure who'd be signed, to be honest. Football manager in the last couple of weeks of tier 3 lockdown.
Anyone else? Any other thoughts?
Wasn't the name I was expecting you to say there, though, Andy? When you said opposite ends of their career, I thought you were going to come out with Ryan Brewster.
To be honest, what I actually meant was that we don't know whether Jimenez will ever play again. And Bamford's got a good few years ahead of him. That was actually what I meant, but I didn't really want to be quite so brutal about it.
Christ alive. You don't know what's
going on. Is that with hospital, though?
I've gone for two, just to kind of wrap it up slightly. I've gone for two midfielders who both play for Palace, James McCarthy and James McArthur. I just think when you look at especially when they won the other night, when they've got Eze, Zaha, Benteke, all of those lads just pretty much run around up top, they pretty much just run the show for them. I know Roy Hodgson's probably is a little bit more of a boring defender, but I think they're both... Borough manager, sorry, I think they're both pretty solid.
Could they do it for Man City with De Bruyne next to them?
I could.
Yeah.
Honestly, well, could you imagine? Man City's star-studded team with a midfield three of Kevin De Bruyne, James McCarthy and James McArthur.
I just mean they do a role. I just think they do a bit of a Grafton role, similar to Hayden, probably.
I wouldn't put them in the bracket with Isaac Hayden. I think what they are is what you get. I think,
but I think you forget about them because of Zaha, because of Eze, because of everyone else doing everything. Zaha's always going to get it. And I think that those two just kind of sit back and do the kind of rubbish jobs that no one really wants.
Unpopular opinion, I'd say you forget about them because they're pretty pony.
Enough of that one then, enough of the discussion. Let's move on. Tinners, what's next?
I've gone with the Mayweather to fight YouTuber Logan Paul. And pretty much, is it just a, I know it's an exhibition fight, but is it just a big hoodoo of what on earth is it? Is it the end of boxing, etc.? It's obviously February 2021, so it's not too far away.
I've got a couple of takeaways from this when I saw the news come out. And one of them is purely and simply, Floyd must be running out of cash. For him to want to be doing this, there has to be a reason. And it's not to prove his boxing legacy, it is to line his pockets. But two, it also absolutely sums up the state of boxing at the moment. And I know it says an exhibition. I know it's not that, but they're going to put boxing gloves on. It's going to be in a square. I have no issue with this. It's not far off Strictly Come Dancing on gas with a massive payday for all involved. The best in boxing currently avoid each other. It's going to take a YouTuber to hype it up. It's going to bring the best ever out of retirement. That's going to do more numbers than any big boxing fight at the moment. And that's because boxing at the moment is absolutely on its arse, especially when you compare it to the UFC.
Do you think Floyd Mayweather's actually giving Logan Paul a cut of like the pay-per-view and everything else? Or do you think he's saying, I will keep all the money. You can have your name against it. You can have another defeat in your, another little tally in your defeat column. And you can do the live streaming of it all for your YouTube channel. And you can make your money that way. Because I bet Logan Paul will make a fortune off all the subsequent videos he'll make of his training camps and him fighting and the press conferences and him trying to trash talk one of the greatest ever boxers.
Well, that's going to be the interesting thing is obviously when Mayweather had his exhibition with McGregor, they went on a world tour, they did the press conferences in London, Toronto, etc. Logan Paul is one draw, one loss on his record, amateur professional. And he's getting a multi-million dollar payday fighting Floyd Mayweather.
And all,
it's
and
like cricket. You are only ever 10 hundreds away from an England call-up. You just need one draw, you just need one loss, and you can fight the best ever to lace them up. The problem is that to make Mayweather all the money off the pay-per-view or off his appearance fee or whatever it might be, Logan Paul has a guaranteed $22 million audience if they pay $1 each to pay for that fight.
But even you take out of it, even people who don't subscribe to Logan Paul, everyone from the British community that followed the last fight and everyone that knows anything about him will be interested in it. And no matter how many boxing kind of fans hate the idea, they will all watch it because they'll all want it to be a nightmare. They'll all want it to go terribly wrong. So the fact of the matter is they're going to make a fortune, even off people who couldn't care less.
The whole build-up, they'll somehow manage to twist a bit of an angle and Mayweather will let them that Logan Paul actually has a chance in this fight. And he doesn't. Whatever size difference they talk about, whatever weight difference they try and talk about, whatever reach advantage they might try and say he has, he doesn't have a chance. Mayweather beat up the Big Show at WrestleMania. He does not care how big or how heavy you are. He will take you down because he is the best boxer ever.
Speaking of how big or how heavy you are, I'd be more likely to pay to watch Floyd Mayweather fight Ricky Hatton now. I think that would be a better exhibition.
Well, that's partly why this is happening is because only a couple of weekends ago, there was the Roy Jones Jr. against Mike Tyson fight.
So that's what I'm saying. I don't mind these great fighters of the past rolling themselves out for an exhibition, a bit of a payday and almost putting on a show when they're fighting other big names in the sport. But I think all of a sudden when you're bringing in a YouTuber who isn't a fighter, he's not a boxer, he obviously wants to be, his brother's doing a bit more damage in the boxing world than he is.
Yeah, he's 2-0, isn't he?
And even then, he's not a boxer.
Well, he's not fighting a boxer, is he? He's essentially fighting an NBA star who's no longer.
But this is what I'm saying, right? It's just, is it the easiest sport because it's got such a big cash out if you've got a name behind it to make a bit of money that they're killing sport in the way they're just for a payday?
It's the state of boxing, though, in terms of the best in boxing currently avoid fighting the best. You've currently got the best heavyweight talent and pool of a generation, and the best three can't find a way to fight each other. And that's a common theme across all weight divisions. Only at the weekend, Errol Spence defended his welterweight title against Danny Garcia. And Terence Crawford, unified, is sat there watching ringside. Can't even mention one another's name in a post-match interview. Don't get someone in the ring to have a standoff to try and hype a fight up. There's no press conference already. Billy Joe Saunders is fighting on Friday night as a world champion. He beats a washed-up 38-year-old, and then he's jumping on the mic saying, I wanted Canelo, I wanted Callum Smith, who fought in a couple of days. It's too late. That's how they happen. All of these big fights that are a boxing fan's wet dream when discussed hypothetically never come to fruition, and that is why a 15-0, five-year retired, 147-pounder against a 0-1, 199-pounder, controversial YouTube star steals the headlines and will do ridiculous pay-per-view numbers. Because boxing stars can't sell a fight anymore. There's not one of them that I would be desperate to hear on the mic post-fight anymore, bar Tyson Fury.
But it's not a case of all these fighters doing it like Jake Paul, Logan Paul, the YouTubers, because it'll be quite funny if they get knocked out one day by Mayweather or absolutely
because,
bullied
because
by
because they've got nothing to lose. Jake Paul knows he signed that documentary. It's exactly what Jimmy's saying in terms of how the contract is negotiated. It won't be a dive. It's an exhibition, so there'll be no winner, no loser, hypothetically. But they'll toy with him for six rounds. Logan Paul might land one punch or whatever it might be, and he might have a chance, just like McGregor was winning on the cards when he was fighting Mayweather. All of a sudden, he takes a couple too many jabs. He turns his back. The referee stops this fight over. McGregor doesn't care what his professional boxing record is. He's walked away with $100 million, and he goes back to the UFC. Logan Paul can lose as many fights as he wants. He makes millions against KSI. He makes millions against Floyd Mayweather. And he can walk away saying, I'm not a boxer.
No. Well, arguably, it's win-win, isn't it? He gets beat. It doesn't matter because it's Mayweather. He wins. And it's like, I'm the best boxer in the world because I've just beaten him. He doesn't lose what I've happened. And he makes a fortune out of it.
They should offer you an incentive to watch. They should say, money back if Mayweather doesn't knock him out in the first round. I'd probably watch it then. Double your money if he doesn't knock him out in the first round. Money back if he knocks him out in the second.
But it's all about the platforms that they're going to show it on, aren't they? Was it the Triller app or something like that in America that they put the Roy Jones fight on against Mike Tyson the other day? That did 1.6 million. In America, Wilder Fury did 850K, Wilder Fury 2. So it's double numbers via an app. Because these people who promoted, they had Snoop Dogg on the commentary. And people are saying he was the freshest, most opinionated person going. It was great to hear a voice. But because KSI and Logan Paul originally, Jake Paul obviously now getting involved, and Ison Gibb was there when they fought, these YouTubers are bringing a whole new audience to boxing. They are growing boxing, but they're not tuning in to fight or to watch a fight at the weekends that would have Canelo and Callum Smith, because those names don't mean anything to them. They only probably know of Floyd Mayweather now because their favourite YouTube star is about to fight him. And that's 22 million people that are about to pay Floyd Mayweather to get back into the ring. So that's his incentive.
He's laughing, isn't he, really? He's getting a brand new crowd on top of what already people will watch. So he's getting an extra 22 million plus, like I said, the British population that watch the KSI fight because they all want Logan Paul to get knocked out.
I honestly, I couldn't care. I won't watch it. I didn't watch the comeback fight the other night of Mike Tyson. I won't watch this. It doesn't appeal to me. It's like, do you know that charity golf day that Phil Mickelson, Tiger Woods,
and things, yeah.
Yeah, it's like watching those play with NFL quarterbacks and people trying to make you get excited about it. Just the hell it. It is what it is at the end of the day. It's a money-making machine for those involved, designed to take money off you to watch, as Doigie said, something that is probably already scripted. The outcome's already known. It's like watching Serie A football. What am I paying they already know what's going to happen.
Mayweather's not going to knock him out, is he? He's going to toy with them for 5-6 rounds because he knows the longer that goes on for, he's going to make more cash. More people are going to tune in, pay for it after the first round and Logan will get a couple of punches on him, etc. And that's what I'll end up. But like, it's the same as Jake Paul will use his brother fighting Mayweather to entice Conor McGregor because that's what he wants. He wants to fight Conor McGregor next. It's because he will use all of this to entice that fight, which no doubt will happen because Conor McGregor's not going to turn down the multi-billions that Jake Paul will pull in for him.
I will watch it if Floyd Mayweather does another episode of MTV Cribs. And there's our weekly MTV Cribs shout out.
The worry is that there are going to be professional boxers, and there already are professional boxers who will be asking to fight on the undercard of that fight. And that is where they see themselves in the sport. A YouTube star is going to come and take the headline. And there will be a world title fight. Javonta Davies wants to fight on the undercard because he wants to be on the same fight or the same fight card as a Mayweather, because he wants to see that many people see him fight, because they can't promote themselves well enough to have that many people want to watch them anyway. You think about the thousands that used to travel across to Vegas to watch Ricky Hatton. There's no one doing that now. No one has that following. No one has that cult support in boxing, because no one can grab the mic at the end of a fight and sell it and call out a name and make a fight and have a build-up and have a press tour conference that sells something as well as people used to be able to in the past, as well as they do in the UFC. They make a fight. Champions fight champions. They protect their O so much. They protect their fighting record. Even Conor Benn the other week had the most rehearsed speech I've ever seen when he was talking about silver spoons and heated Range Rovers last month. And Floyd himself has always had that saying of own the narrative. And if no other boxer is going to come out and do that in boxing to put boxing on the map and have these great fights, he'll keep turning up every now and again, do just that, and steal all the pay-per-view revenue, just like he did when he went and fought the young Japanese kickboxer in Japan a few months ago.
But the thing is, there's no boxers that do that, but then the YouTubers can do that, and they will do that, and they just get under people's skin. They just nag and nag and nag, because they don't care how long it takes to get the fight. They will just get the fight eventually, because they've always got their 22 million people back and saying, come on. And it's not just them nagging them. It's the 22 million people saying, are you scared of fight? What are you doing? What's going on? And before you know it, it happens. Like, this has kind of come out of the blue a little bit. It was sporting about, then all of a sudden, February 2021, happy days, it's on. And that's because YouTubers have got nothing to lose and they're quite happy to promote themselves in that way.
And it's exactly as you said before. There'll be a fly on the wall documentary. There'll be a camp lead-up documentary over the next 3 months. There'll obviously be the pay-per-view itself. There'll be an aftermath. There'll probably be another fight against someone, I would have thought. It wouldn't surprise if Jake Paul was on that one fighting someone and then he's able to call it out, and it all stems from that. Because it is a game that's a money game in the end. And Joe Rogan raised the question on his podcast, I think it was, and he said, the worry about this is that it's an exhibition at the moment. Give it 3 months, give it the hype, the build-up that's going to happen to it, where it's all talked about. You've got at least 22 million people talking about it. We're talking about it. Everyone else is going to be talking about it, seeing it happening. There's going to be millions of people discussing it. Whether millions of people buy it or not, there's millions of people discussing it. And one of these governing bodies is going to sanction a belt and make it a sanctioned fight where Logan Paul, can have another professional record. Floyd Mayweather can go to 51-0, and there's going to be some joke of a belt commissioned for that fight where they'll be able to hold it up at the end. I won this belt by beating so-and-so.
This can make it like a WWE match. Logan Paul can have Jake Paul in his corner. Floyd Mayweather can have Manny Pacquiao, and it's a tag team match.
It is, but they might as well Royal Rumble it.
I'd pay to watch that. I think that'd be class.
And that is the way it's going. You're going to get 5 Hall of Famers on one side, 5 YouTubers in the other, and it's going to be a free-for-all death till the end.
Well, it's one of those things, isn't it? Like I said, I think it's all a big... It's just going to keep rolling on and on and on. Jake Paul wants to fight Conor McGregor or KSI, and that is all he's going to go for now. He's going to ask for one of them, knowing that it's going to be either way, either fight. It's another big YouTuber from the UK, which means he gets loads of his viewers watching it and they make a fortune from it. Or he fights Conor McGregor because his brother's fighting Mayweather. Does Conor McGregor really want to be outdone by Mayweather? Probably not. So he probably will get the fight. That's how it works. And they are obviously clever lads, the Paul brothers, because they're just making an absolute fortune from being not being boxers, that, and they're making a killing from it.
Yeah, and that is the sorry state of it. But anyway, seeing as we're talking about boxing, let's talk about proper boxing just very briefly, looking ahead to the weekend. Our weekly prediction, just to close the show, Anthony Joshua makes his return to the ring at the weekend. He's fighting Pulev. He's in London. He's got a little bit of a crowd in front of him. Before we make a prediction, is he going to win that one? Should it be a stepping stone? Should he then grab the mic and call out a Fury?
I think he should do. I know Fury's kind of half called him out in the last few days as well. From looking at Twitter and Facebook and stuff, he's certainly called him out again. So I don't see why. I mean, Joshua should win it. I imagine he will win it. And then he should grab the mic and say, right, my next fight is Fury or the next, whoever else is. The problem is the boxers, like we said, they take whoever's next in line. They don't take the next big boxer. They should take, it should be Fury, Joshua, once Joshua wins this next fight.
Well, go on then, let's make that our prediction. Tin, as you start, what's your prediction for that fight?
Oh, I think it'll be a knockout. I think it'll be, we'll go fourth round.
Jimmy?
I've gone slightly later. I've gone seventh round. Joshua knockout.
Right, you've nicked my call, so I'm going to have to go slightly later still. I think it'll be deeper into the fight. I'm going to go ace then, Jimmy. I'm going to go Joshua and ace. It'll get stopped. And I'm going to predict that he won't call anyone out on the mic, or at least it won't be sincere. But we'll see. We'll wait what happens. Anything to add before we wrap up?
Nothing to add. Good. I know we ended on Raul Jimenez last week as well. It's good to see that he's out of hospital and hopefully he'll come back soon. But no, nothing to add.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Touch wood. Jimmy?
No, not much to report. Just hopefully another good weekend of sport.
Yeah, I hope you get to another non-league, Jimmy. I look forward to hearing the round.
Maybe I could make it a little feature every week, talk about my non-league weekend experience. What I've seen going on the local doors.
Jimmy's weekend.
Rate the pie. Rate the keeper, rate the ref. There we go. There's the three things that I'm after.
Tie, patter, pints. Rate them all.
Gents, it's been a pleasure. We'll catch you next week.
See you later, fellas.
As always. See you later.
I'm the cat with the bass and drum, going around like bum, bum, bum.